What is up, Packer fans? The sounds you're hearing are the calls from ESPN Brazil announcing the final Hail Mary touchdown by Aaron Rodgers. Makes for really good radio, in my opinion. How's it going? I know you're all feeling pretty good after that win. So am I. I'm your host, Brian Fonfair, and with me, I've got Dusty Evely.
Hi.
What's up, Dusty?
Nothing, man. Just living life.
Just living life. And life is pretty good right now for a Packer fan, at least this week. And we've got the man who deserves no introduction, Jordan.
Good to be with you guys. And by guys, I mean just Dusty, actually. Not guys. Not you, Brian. I'm not
That's
happy.
Fair. I do not deserve your praise. I've been picking on this guy since sophomore year of high school. So if there's anybody in the world with a score to settle with me, it's Jordan. Okay, before we get to the football, a little bit of a sour note. It was a little bit of a rough week in the Packers blogosphere, so I want to give a couple shout-outs. First of all, to Adam Cech of Cheesehead TV, announced last week that he was diagnosed with colon cancer. So our thoughts and prayers are with him, of course. And Titletown found out his very own. What's that?
Hang in there,
all right. And Titletown sound off's own Chris Kostofsko, who today announced that his wife lost the baby she was carrying, so rough times in that household as well. So you have all the love and support of the guys of Pack to the Future, and you'll get through this stronger, guys.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Thoughts and prayers going out, man.
Exactly. All right, on to the football. A lot to talk about. Obviously, we want to talk about the Hail Mary, which we promise we will get to. First, we're going to get the negative stuff out of the way by talking about the other 60 minutes of football that happened on Thursday night in Detroit. It was rough to watch. Play calling was still rough. And now there's a whole new conversation to be had about it, though. Mike McCarthy answering questions about the play calling admitted that maybe he needs to shut up on the sideline. And we talked about this last week, saying, you know, maybe he has veto power, so he should be a little bit more responsible for what's going on. And I adamantly denied that, thinking there's no way he's out there actually vetoing plays as they're coming in, making pre-snap more confusing, just adding problems left and right. But now if he's coming out saying he needs to shut up, maybe that is what's happening. And maybe Tom Clemens has been getting a little bit too much of the blame and Mike McCarthy not enough. So, guys, tell me what you think of the play calling and I guess this latest development. Dusty, kick us off.
Yeah, I mean, it's concerning to say the least. And I did not look at the actual penalties to see how that swings, but it does seem like they've been a little later to snap the ball, more delay of game penalties than I can remember in a while. I'm trying to see if I can find the stat right now, but I mean, McCarthy has done well in play calling when he's been there. So part of me kind of wants him having input, but if that's confusing things going in and if it's, I don't know. If he's going to be involved, I want him to be involved. I don't want him just kind of sitting there and saying, oh, I don't like this one. I don't like this one. It makes things way too confusing. I kind of want him all in or all out. So it is a little concerning for sure.
Couldn't agree more. That's concerning is kind of an understatement in my mind as well. I know it's kind of hard to come up with a stronger word in that regard, but I mean, give the guy the job or don't. Now, I'd prefer to have Mike McCarthy doing it, but if he's been, you know, kind of meddling, you know, what's the point of having someone else do it if you're still focusing on it, but then not giving it your full attention? You know, I think it's terrible if that's actually what's going on. Jordan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. There's you get to a point, particularly in any team sport at any level, of being overcoached. And if it is the fact where you're getting input from McCarthy, you're getting input from Clemens, that's just making it more difficult to communicate information. So simplicity needs to be the goal with this. If it's got to be just Clemens, then it should be just him. If it's got to be just McCarthy, then it should be just McCarthy. So there shouldn't be any real mixed, not mixed signals, just the communication needs to be a lot better, obviously. And it's been better in the past, and they need to get to that point. So I agree with what both of you guys are saying.
Actually, I do have one more thought on that. Now that I'm kind of thinking about it a little more, is that so? If it's later getting into Rodgers, that also kind of, I know he does checks the line and they cut off the helmet at a certain point, but that would also maybe kind of help explain some of his struggles. If he's later getting the call, he's later doing his checks at the line, and that could explain some stuff. Some other beyond the play calling, that could explain some other stuff kind of going on with the offense as well.
Yeah, so I guess in theory, what we should be seeing is a much more efficiently run offense this week because Mike McCarthy, maybe he'll take his own advice and shut up. And, you know, if that ends up being the case, then what was he doing for these first 12 games? Like, how did it take until after week 13 to realize that you shouldn't be meddling in other people's jobs, especially not time-sensitive jobs? You can make your adjustments mm-hmm. between drives. You can't, you know, hear something in the headset and say, no, 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 we're not going to do that. Or, hey, change the play. You know, you gotta give the power to the guys you're giving the power to. So mm-hmm. I guess we'll see how legitimate all of this talk is, how legitimate his own analysis is based on how well this offense plays. And I know we're going up against a really good defense against Dallas, but still, if we're getting calls to the quarterback faster and he's getting to his checks sooner and snapping the ball on his terms, not rushing it out, then we should see a much better offensive output this week. And I'm not convinced that that's the whole problem, but I guess we're going to find out. All right, another thing that's a bit concerning and just an absolute roller coaster all season has been Eddie Lacy. You know, his comments saying, you know, he was just downstairs and that's why he missed curfew. He lost track of time, you know, hanging out with Harris, Alonzo Harris, who was cut. Big problems. You know, the guy's just been so inconsistent this year. The attitude hasn't quite been there. But now McCarthy came out and said that it's been a really good week of practice for him, and it looks like he's ready to have a big week. So, I don't know. Are you guys buying or selling that Eddie Lacy's back, Jordan?
I'm not going to buy it until I see him perform over the course of the next couple weeks. I think we saw in the games against Chicago and Minnesota what he's capable of. He's when he's healthy, he's good. Now, this whole thing that happened with the curfew, I mean, I don't think anybody really knows exactly what the details are. It didn't sound like it's a thing of him being, you know, stupid out clubbing the night before a game. It doesn't sound mm-hmm. like it's anything so extreme like that. If it was something like that, then there'd be red flags all over it. But it doesn't seem like that's really the case. So there's just nothing about Lacy that just tells me that this is a bad guy. This is a guy you shouldn't have in your locker room. And maybe I'm wrong, but he just does not give that vibe the way he speaks in interviews and whatnot. So, but whether I'm buying if he's going to be productive or not, it's just, it depends. It depends how we're using him. If we're giving him the rock again, another 20 times this week, I think he could be productive. Whether our offensive line is healthy enough to, you know, make the holes to spring him free this week, that's, to be determined. But, I don't want to say I'm fully buying or fully selling on it, but we just got to see what's going to happen. I would tend to buy it more than sell it, though.
All right. I don't particularly want to sell, but I am. There's nothing telling me that I should buy on these comments. Just the way Eddie Lacy's been all year, you know, the attitude hasn't quite been there. The drive hasn't quite been there. It looked like he was back 200-yard rushing games, and then he has closer to two rushes the next game, and because he missed curfew, and he didn't look good in those few rushes that he did have on Thursday night either. So you could tell his head wasn't there. And
yeah, well,
what really concerned – go ahead.
No, just to be fair, no one really looked that great running the ball on Thursday. So it was tough sledding against Detroit.
Well, Crockett looks pretty good.
A few times. I mean,
very,
he had one,
very
five,
limited,
five,
but, you know, I don't expect
five
a whole
carries.
Ton out of him.
Right.
But what really concerns me in all of this, though, is so Eddie Lacy benched and Alonzo Harris cut, and the report that came out was Alonzo Harris was apparently, you know, thought of as a bad influence on Eddie Lacy. And I'm thinking, that guy's a rookie. Why is the rookie being the bad influence? Like, why is our third year all-pro, well, maybe not all-pro, but really good running back, why is he being influenced by a rookie? Negatively or positively, he should be the leader. You're the power back. You're the top guy in this running game. You should be influencing everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, just says something to me about his mental state in the NFL. You know, maybe he's not – I in no way do I think he's anyone that's bad to have in your locker room, but I'm seriously doubting what he adds to the locker room. He may not take away, but I don't get the impression that he adds anything either. Dusty, what's your take?
First off, he seems like a very happy guy and all the stuff I've seen, just a jolly little fat man. Like, I
mm-hmm.
just kind of imagine him and Alonzo Harris, like, they missed curfew because they went to, like, a soda bar together or something, you know? Like, they're just, just a couple gentlemen out of the town just, you know, just looking for a good root beer or something, so.
Were they drinking
one milkshake
with two straws?
Yeah. I mean, maybe they downed, you know, they're big guys. Maybe it was four milkshakes with two straws, you know? I don't know what that is. It may have gotten a little wild, but I don't know. I don't want to speculate on locker room stuff. Again, he seems like a happy guy. He seems genuinely well liked.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to make too much of it. He got 19 snaps. He got five carries. Again, he like you said, he didn't look good in those five carries. He had 4 yards. He had one reception for negative 3 yards, but the offense wasn't open in holes. Crockett looked good. He was kind of making some plays. Starks looked good in the screen game. Lacy did not look good. That may have just been the line. I'm not entirely sure. And the fact that he only got 19 snaps. I mean, he just wasn't out there. So I'm in for this week. He's coming off of two straight 100-yard games. In those games, it was he averaged like 4.5 and over 6 yards a carry against Minnesota and Chicago. So I'm buying. I'm looking forward to a resurgence from him this week. I think he's going to come back. I think he's going to play well. Cowboys defense is tough, but I think he's the guy for it. I think he'll kind of batter him a little bit. I look forward to him running over some linebackers. But I'm all in on Lacy this week. Might just be because I'm a Lacy guy, but I think he's going to be very good this week.
All right. No, that's fair enough. And you did bring up the offensive line. I guess, to be fair to these running backs, only I think Josh Sitton was the only lineman that played that entire game of our regular starters.
Yep.
You know, without...
Yeah, the Bakhtiari only missed one snap.
Yeah. And, oh, man, was that a terrible
snap. It was a bad snap. It was a very bad snap.
It was frustrating, you know, it goes into the play calling mess that, you know, you have your backup guard in at left tackle, and they did nothing to help him against a premier pass rusher in this league, and he got embarrassed.
Yeah,
exactly what you thought would happen. You know, there was
they had
no
one to
help
chip,
for the
and
poor
they had
kid.
Routes. I think it was like three routes, like 20 yards downfield, and no one to chip him. Like, what do you think is going to happen there?
Goodness. That's a perfect time to run a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And even
or a delayed run.
And we're still,
or
we're
a
still
slant.
You're talking about having your all-pro quarterback back there just taking a wicked shot. So
seriously.
It's just it all adds up to just a really, really poor play call. And yes, to go along with what you guys are saying.
Right. I felt really bad for Walker. You know, there was not much he could do, you know, playing out of position. Adversely, though, we do have to give credit Don Barclay, I thought, played really well, and even better was Lane Taylor at right guard. I thought he had a heck of a game. So,
Taylor was good. When Treader came in about halfway through the game, his first snap was bad, but he performed decently after that as well.
There's been little to no drop-off from Lindsley to Treader.
Yeah, Treader's been
we
good.
Have,
we have two really good centers, and obviously we won't be able to keep both of them long term, but we are quite lucky in that regard.
True.
All right. Well, let's get to the part of the game everybody wants to talk about. I would say the final few seconds, but it's actually after regulation where it finally got really interesting. I guess, to be fair, the few seconds before that were interesting. You know, we tried the lateral play. Guys, really quickly, just in 10 words or less, your thoughts when Richard Rodgers on that lateral play threw it to the furthest man back, and that furthest man back was our all-pro franchise quarterback, Dusty.
First of all, it was a really good throw. It was a tight spiral. He kind of threw across his body, probably like 15, 20 yards back. Like for a tight end, that's a really impressive throw, right on the money. But, I mean, then after that was there's no one back there. It's Rodgers. He's going to get killed. And he can't throw to anyone else. Game's over. Like they never shot at that point.
It surely looked over. Jordan, what were your thoughts?
Same exact thing. Once he makes the throw, you just see Rodgers there with three guys around him, and you're like, well, that's it. And then you see the face mask get tugged, or at least what looked like a lot more violent than what it actually was. But you see that happen, and I'm just like, oh, we got one more play. I didn't even know what yard line we were at, but I'm like, we got one more play. And the rest, as they say, is history.
I literally did sink to the floor when Rodgers threw that ball that far back. You know, and then it just got so much worse when I realized the guy he threw to was Aaron Rodgers. I'm like, what are you doing? And then jumped right back up when I saw the helmet whip to the side. And yes, if you're listening and you're a fan of another team, get over it. It was a penalty. He hit the face mask. It went flying in the other direction. Just because he didn't grab doesn't mean it wasn't a penalty. And Adrian Peterson, it especially was not a pass interference, even though you went on Twitter to argue that point. It was, oh my goodness.
It was pass interference in Aberderis, though. It was uncalled pass interference in Aberderis. So don't forget
that. It was,
that.
And they said live that it was a good call because the cornerback was looking at the ball, but looking at the ball does not give you license to tackle the receiver while the ball's in the air.
Not only that, Mike Carey, I think, went as far to say that he was playing the ball, and I watched it again, and I'm like, I don't know about that.
It's another Mike instance, Carey we've talked good. About this, wow. Mike Carey on the show just being, he was a good ref, just can't do it on TV. Whatever. All right, so then the very next play, you know, I'm thinking, look, the Lions gave us every opportunity to win the game in Lambeau, and here they're doing it again. You can't give Aaron Rodgers every opportunity to win two games and expect him to lose both. So right there I'm thinking, we have a legitimate shot at making this play work. So the Hail Mary happens. I was as speechless as I feel right now, to be honest. I felt bad for everybody in my apartment building, because I just let out this laughing whelp, I guess you would call it. And my wife, who had given up on the game, you know, she's had some medical issues with her inner ear, so it's been hard for her to watch a fast-paced sport on TV. So she's like, I'm not going to risk getting sick tomorrow over this game that's going so terribly. So she's in the other room, and I make that noise, like, what are you doing? Like, what happened? She thought it was going to be negative, but I'm like, get in here! So, guys, how many of your neighbors did you wake up?
I'll tell you what, I think when the when Stafford completed the 3rd and 12 and picked up the first down, I was ready. I wasn't going to walk out the door, but I got my shoes on, got all my stuff. I'm like, all right, that's all she wrote. So I was gonna finish it out the whole time, but I'm like, all right, this is just, gotta watch till the end and everything. But Yeah, when the play actually happened, before the snap even occurred, I'm like, watch him, and this is me just being very pessimistic and negative, but I'm just like, watch him sack us with a 3-man rush, and we got 5 guys back there. I'm like, that's how this game is going to end, with them sacking us on a 3-man rush. That was what was going through my head. So once he gets outside, I'm like, all right, well, he's going to get a shot to the end zone. I still wasn't too optimistic, but I remember even seeing once the ball got to the end zone. And I see Richard Rodgers backing up. I remember getting pretty excited about that. And then, yeah, I don't know if I've ever been more thrilled with one singular play as a Packer fan. I really don't know if I ever went
Tremont
that
Williams,
crazy after a play.
Tremont Williams breaking up the pass in the Super Bowl. I think that was it for me.
That's fair. That, I tell you, with that one, I mean, obviously, that's way up there. For that one, that was just more of a sigh of relief, then a euphoric feeling. I didn't go as absolutely crazy for that, but in terms of just going absolutely berserk, I think this Rodgers play is right up there, if not number one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I mean, first of all, like, I've never seen a throw like that.
Never.
For him to throw that, I'm assuming you guys have seen every single angle, so that fan angle where you can see it coming within about 10 feet of the roof of Ford Field, he released that, and I thought, there's no way that's getting to the end zone. With as high as he threw that, I didn't think there's any way. And kind of the same thing as Jordan. So I was watching that. I usually watch it with a couple of my brothers and a good friend of mine, but and just being my youngest brother and me in his apartment. And so he chucks it up high. Like, holy crap, like, that's not making it. You're watching. It starts coming down. You kind of see Rodgers backing up, sizing it up. I think he's got a chance at this. He caught it, and we like screamed so loud. His roommate was in like two rooms over, watching the Phantom Menace, like a monster. You guys, the Phantom Menace, like willingly.
No,
in 2015. So he comes out. He and his girlfriend are in there, and they both come out. His girlfriend's a diehard Vikings fan. And he just kind of peeks his head around the corner and says, you guys, we heard you screaming. Did something really good or something really bad happen? We couldn't really tell. Trying to, like, reach out. Like, he got back, and, like, he threw it really, really high. It was, like, two 10-year-old kids that had just seen, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or me after seeing Pacific Rim for the first time, like, just, like, pounding our legs and, like, just so excited. So, yeah, I mean, that's, I've been more excited as a Packers fan, but that was just so ridiculously unexpected. I put together a GIF of that for the article, and so I've watched that, I don't know, about 100 times by now or something. Yeah. I just get excited every single time.
I have to give a shout out to my brother here, my brother Mike. If you don't know me and my brother or anyone in our family, Funfair men are not famous for being tall. We'll put it that way. My brother always pointed out to me when I was growing up, and you know, this is baseball related, so he was a big fan of David Eckstein, who played for the LA Angels. And every chance he would get, he would point out David Eckstein to me because he listed his height as 5'8¾". You know, he made sure he got every quarter of an inch measured. And he always pointed out, he said, all right, wait for a ball to go to shortstop and watch him throw. And he would put his entire body behind every throw to first base, no matter how close of a play it was going to be. He just launched his entire body into it. And my brother always admired that. If you look at the replay of Aaron Rodgers throwing that ball, it's exactly the same. Every single muscle in Aaron Rodgers' body was as flexed as could be when he released that ball. His back was bent in three different directions. His arm almost touched the ground, it looked like. And just his entire body was behind that throw. And it was amazing to get that high of a throw and that far. I don't know if I could throw a football that high or that far. And he did both. That was impressive.
I think he's a beautiful man. He's a beautiful man.
I think they timed it at almost 4.5 seconds of hang time on a throw.
Boy, Maste would kill for that.
He hasn't had a punt that good all year. And here, the definition of the fine line between greatness and being a punchline, a laughing stock. In the NFC Championship game last year, came down to that onside kick, and Brandon Bostic went up for it when he was supposed to block for Jordy Nelson and just flubbed it and ruined the entire game. It was over from there. This one, Richard Rodgers admitted he was supposed to block for Davante Adams to go up and get that ball. He jumps up and grabs the ball, and instead of everybody hating him and running him out of town, he is in the history books now. He's going to be a trivia question for a long time.
You can see him in that, too. I love that clip. When Rodgers releases that ball, he's at the 10-yard line. He mm-hmm. even kind of does, like, looks at the ball. He spins, he looks back at the end zone. You can almost see him think, there's a line there. There's a line in the middle of the end zone. I think I can size this up. You can see him as he drifts back and from where he knows the defense is. You can see him size that thing up and kind of think, I think I got a shot at that. Whereas Adams was back in the scrum. I mean, that's, like you said, it's a fine line, but he made the right choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, continuing our talk on this amazing Hail Mary play. I know Jordan was posed with a really interesting question right after it happened. So, Jordan, take it away.
Yeah, me and my brother were talking just about most exciting plays. I think what we really got us on the conversation was the radio calls of the games, and we had kind of talked about how the one that Wayne and Larry gave for this one was a little underwhelming based on what they've given us in the past, but it just got us going talking on just what are most exciting plays that we've lived through in our lifetime. So we had mentioned mm-hmm. The Al Harris pick six against the Seahawks back in 2003 in the playoffs. You still got the Freeman touchdown. I remember going nuts for that one as well. Oh man, I'm drawing a blank on the fourth one that we had. Help me out, guys. It's probably one you guys know.
Oh boy, what are you doing to it?
Well, we kind of went over. I mean, was it any of them we went over last week? Was that last week we went over? It was the Favre plays, like best Favre plays.
Favre plays. Yeah, and I think it was the Jennings. It might have been the Jennings touchdown as well. The Jennings touchdown in 07 against the Broncos in overtime. Yeah.
Okay.
But just talking about just the excitement of the play, how crazy we went, and then we just including the implications of the game, you know, whether they had play. Oh, actually, the play we're thinking of was the Rodgers to Cobb against the Bears in Week 17 a couple years ago. That was that was the play.
Yes.
That was the other one.
We got there. We got there.
So I knew I'd get there. So for me, I was talking about with my brother about this. I'm like, it was tough to have this conversation with the Rodgers Hail Mary, you know, just the day prior. So you still had that excitement, you know, fresh in the mind. But for me, it's a tough one, but actually that Al Harris pick six, I remember that very vividly as well. Just having, first of all, just seeing him get the interception, going nuts for that. And then the celebration was just him with the 3 or 4 second run it took for him to get all the way to the end zone. And you knew he was going to score the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
That was a wonderful moment.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going, I've got some. Actually, I got one that technically is not a Packers play, but I think fits. So, first of all, if we're talking pick sixes, the Tremont Williams interception in the Falcons playoff game at the end of the half was one of, and that, I mean, that wasn't end of the game, and that was where they put him up 28-14 at the half, I think.
Yep.
Just the fact how Rodgers was playing, how he played, that game is one of the better quarterback games I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
But just that going into the half was such a huge play.
Mm-hmm.
That was I was watching that with my little brother, and I mean he broke on that. You could see that coming a mile away.
Yep.
And as he's running, he made that cut back inside to get to the end zone. And I look back, I'm sitting in my chair and I'm cheering. I look back and my brother is standing on my couch just with both arms raised, just screaming. That was a great play. I think if I mentioned it earlier, the Tremont Williams breaking up the pass to, I believe, Mike Wallace to end the Super Bowl back in 2010. That was a big one. The Rodgers throw to Jennings in that game. Well, I mean, that was a huge play at the time. And just looking at how that play happened was insane. I gotta go. My last one, technically not Packers, was Nate Poole catching a ball against the Vikings. That's what the Packers in. Was that 02?
03. That was the same. It was the same 03. Year as the Al Harris kicks. It was the same year as the Al Harris.
Yeah.
Kicks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because that was week 17 that got the Packers into the playoffs. Well, technically not a Packers play. That one was. That was just a huge play. I think the Packers already won. They needed the Vikings to lose, and that was last second. And in this day and age, because that was ruled force out. He didn't get both feet down. That would not have been a catch. But that was such a huge play. I will never ever forget Nate Poole. So those are a couple that spring to mind immediately for me.
Well, if we're talking best Wayne and Larry call, that one. Them calling the Nate Poole catch on the radio, because that's what I was listening to. I didn't actually watch that play happen. I was listening to them in my basement. I was playing pool with my brother and listening to that play, and them just going nuts. Oh, that, I remember that so clearly.
Well, that was
I'm going to pause our podcast so that we can play the Paul Allen call of that Nate Poole touchdown.
That's
beautiful.
Classic.
Absolutely classic. Beautiful.
Get back, guys.
Here it is. The season's on the line. Two receivers left and right. McCown takes the snap. He steps up. He's all by himself. Fires into the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! No! No! The Cardinals have knocked the Vikings out of the playoffs.
Oh,
that
love
was
it. Love it.
I watch a lot of games with my family, so that was my younger brother. He was 14 at the time, 13 or 14 at the time, I guess. I think he would have been 14. And he was so worked up after the Packers win, and then we were watching that game, and that came down the wire, that when Poole caught that touchdown, he ran to the bathroom and just threw up. He just had so much. Like, that was just, he released it all. Like, that was, they're in. Like, that was a huge moment. I'll always remember that.
Love it. All right, well, Dusty brought up some great moments, but he technically cheated by not sticking to the four that Jordan brought up.
No, this has been great.
Four. I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize. You brought up some great moments. I'll stick to those four. I'm going to tell you, this moment from Thursday night could very well go down as one of the biggest moments in Packer history, or it could just go down as one of the best plays in Packer history. Because we have no idea what the ramifications are. If the Packers come out on Sunday afternoon and they play the same uninspired offense with no rhythm and nothing really good going for them, then that play doesn't matter. In the grand scheme of things, it'll end up just as a great memory. Now, they could also come out and this could charge their season. It's the type of play that can turn around a season. So it could very well be one of the biggest plays in our history. But we don't know yet. So what I'm going with is that Randall Cobb touchdown at the end of that Bears game. Because it was such a rough season up until then. Aaron Rodgers missed most of the year, comes back to play the Bears at Soldier Field. You win, you're in. You know, lose, you're out. Everything is on the line against our team's biggest rival. And to end it on that play, to go for it all on fourth down like that, it's so rare, but you know, he obviously just had to. The guy was wide open. And that's just one of those great plays that you know immediately the implications of that play. So that is why I'm choosing that one, because you knew immediately, boom, that's another NFC North Division title. Boom, that's another win over the Bears in Soldier Field. So many implications immediately recognized. I right now, I call that play bigger. My initial reaction was much bigger for this play, for the Hail Mary, because I've just never seen anything like that in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as implications go, we just don't know what this means for the rest of our year yet. And
big thanks to Chris Conte for making that Rodgers to Cobb play happen.
Praises due.
Exactly. All right, and I sign off this talk with a text I got from my really good friend Aaron Oberle. Said,
say what you want about the struggles this year, but this is the kind of play that not only gets seasons back on track, but turns great players into legends. I thought that was extremely well said.
I'd like to add one more thing. I know there's been talk all season of McCarthy possibly losing this team. There was talk during the game on the cesspool known as Twitter. But the way the team reacted and the way they reacted around McCarthy during this during the end of this game. Now, I know emotions are high, but I think if you hate your coach, you don't react the way some of these players reacted. So I think that's. I think that says a little something as well. It could turn seasons around, like you said, great players into legends. But I think in the moment, it also kind of shows that McCarthy, for all the problems this team has had, has not lost this team.
And I think that's been proven too in the other losses we've had besides the Broncos game. I wouldn't even say we laid down in that game. All of our other losses, we've battled to the very last play. Mm-hmm. The team doesn't give up early in the second half or in the fourth quarter. It doesn't lay down. They haven't done that all season. So that's just to reinforce your point there for sure.
We have a good tweet to kind of sum up everything we've talked about thus far, as far as the play calling and the Hail Mary goes. We got a tweet from @DorkPackersFan. He said, should plan A on offense now be get the ball to the 40 and let Aaron sling it into the end zone, or something a bit more subtle? I see nothing wrong with that plan. Nothing else is working.
Maybe try getting it to the 50. You know, we don't want to throw his arm out the whole game.
Oh, that's true.
That's true. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, his arm is – I don't know how much of that it takes. So, yeah, the 50. 50 is probably good. That's not a bad plan.
Definitely don't go more subtle. I mean – we've been as subtle as can be this entire season. Let's go extreme. Let's go badass. Let's do it.
Absolutely.
All right, moving on to next week. Let's talk some Packers Cowboys and welcome our guest, Michael Sizemore, who writes for Blogging with the Boys, the SB Nation blog for the Cowboys. Michael, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How you guys doing on this fine wintry evening?
Oh, we are fantastic. Could not possibly be better.
How cold is it up there?
Well, you're asking the wrong guy. None of us live in Green Bay.
Okay, cool, because I live in Austin. It's not cold here either. We're all good.
We are scattered around the country. That's what makes our podcast great.
That's what makes it great, for sure.
All right. So, Michael, let's get to the Cowboy talk. You finally got a win without Tony Romo. You were winless before that, and you're now just one game out of the division talk in what is just a laughingstock of a division this year. So describe to me the mood in Dallas. Are you kind of hoping you squeeze your way in and, you know, just see what happens in the playoffs, or are you thinking, we don't have Tony Romo, what's the point of trying to get into the playoffs? Let's jockey for a draft pick.
First of all, I would say the correct term for the NFC East is dumpster fire.
That's fair. I like it.
It is a nasty, stinking pile of dumpster fire on a hot summer day. and the Cowboys just happen to be at the bottom of that right now, but are only one game away from being at the top of the heap of the dumpster fire that is the NFC East. However, I will say this. The mood probably in Dallas is, as long as there's a chance, you're going to keep fighting. That's the Jason Garrett type of mantra. You're not going to stop. You know, this is the NFL. You don't tank. You don't tank games unless you're
right.
The Colts. Excuse me, sorry. that came out. But you don't tank. You don't tank if you are a real team that is full of contending players. Let's be honest with. I mean, this is a team that has a lot of good players on it. They're just missing the one player that takes them from being good to great. And he happens to be on the shelf, at least, for the near future. But I think there are probably some fans that would hope that we would get that top five pick type of thing. And some were even hoping before this last week that they could be in contention for the number one overall pick. How do you do that? How can you be two games out of the NFC East and also be contending for the number one pick overall? That
right.
is only something that the Cowboys could do, gentlemen. That is only something that we could do. But either way, we're now not going to get the top pick. Absolutely not. That's not going to happen after we beat the Redskins. But also, another thing that's good about this is the Cowboys, they're going to do whatever they can to try to win the division, because this division hasn't had a repeat in a long, long time. And it doesn't look like they will have one this year. Even without Romo, there's not a lot that, you know, that the team can disguise a lot of things, but you can't really disguise quarterback play. That kind of separates you on Sundays from being contenders and pretenders. And the Cowboys are going to try their best to do with what they can with Matt Cassel. But I'll tell you this, if Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer, and guys of like that can win, then also a man named Jim McMahon in Chicago can win with good defense. Maybe the Cowboys can win their division with good defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. You look at the Seahawks, the year they went 7-9, and then actually won a playoff game that they hosted against the Saints. You know. Never know. And if you have a chance to go win a playoff game, why not?
The NFC
is so weak. If you won your playoff game and ended up hosting the Vikings, per se, you could easily beat the Vikings.
Well, I'll go even further, and I'd go even further and say this. I know that they're playing better right now, but look when the Seahawks came to town and played the Matt Cassel Cowboys. They won by 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
1 point because the defense had played so well. If you get the same play out of that defense, you can probably do the same. It's a lot of teams are going to have troubles playing against the Cowboys' defense. It's hard to even really imagine in a season that has gone so awry for them. But if you look, that's one good thing they can hang their hat on is the fact that they probably got a good defense coming up, and that they with a couple of more picks here and there and a couple more pieces to the puzzle, they're already a top five defense. I think they're fifth actually. They're looking next year possibly at a top three, even like just maybe even the best defense in the league, possibly, if they can learn to start getting turnovers.
So tell me, what has this defense pumping so much? I mean, we know Sean Lee is such a good linebacker. Is it him being a leader, or is it just everybody stepping up?
Well, you know, I think that when we get into the offseason and you take the microscope onto this team and you look at the defense, one, you have to admit they have one of the greatest defensive coordinators in the game, one of the greatest defensive coaches in the game, in Rod Marinelli. But also the pick that they did for Byron Jones in the first round. This offseason, people kept talking about DeMarcus Lawrence. They kept talking about Greg Hardy, obviously, ad nauseum. They kept talking about, Randy Gregory. He was a big time, because I think he overshadowed the pick. Him and the acquisition of Lyle Collins overshadowed the pick of Byron Jones. But people forget that Byron Jones is at the top of the league in just athleticism alone. And they put that, their corners would be, they would be okay. It's time to see what Byron Jones can do at safety. And all I have to say to defend Byron Jones is just go back and look at the New England Patriots game. I know that the ending score was 30-6, but go look what he did to Rob Gronkowski, and you will see a player that is going to be fantastic in this league against tight ends, but anything they throw at him. He's going to be really good at handling any type of adversity that comes his way. He's a good player, and he's probably going to get even better. Then you talk about a young defensive line. You got, you know, Randy Gregory's in there. He missed a few games this year with an ankle, but he's in there. Then you got Greg Hardy, which we'll see how that ends in the off season or doesn't. Mm-hmm. Maybe they get him to a good deal, but I don't know about that yet. But you look at Tyron Crawford, and you look at these guys, DeMarcus Lawrence, things like that. You look at these guys, and you see guys that are just they have relentless effort, and that's what's made them good. That's what's made the defense good. And then you have Sean Lee and Rolando McClain next to each other. That's just like, if you had fantasy football and could pick defensive players and pick linebackers, I don't know if you can find a better tandem in the league than that.
AJ Hawk.
I'm talking about when you look at what Rolando McClain and Sean Lee have done, I think there's a stat, you can go on Twitter, I think I found it. It might, in 547 snaps this year, I believe the two played, they have not given up one touchdown. One.
Wow.
Those two guys. Not one. So I mean, you're talking about elite play from the linebackers. And like, you know, with Rolando McClain, it's always going to – is he going to take this play off? Is he going to play for the full – for the full game? Is he going to be in, is his mind going to be right and things of that nature? But he's really come along strongly in the last few weeks, and they really seem to have this defense humming, especially the way they performed against the Redskins. Sean Lee is obviously a great leader. They have some things they got to do in the secondary. They probably can't wait to get Orlando Scandrick back next year off that torn ACL. But you might be talking about Brandon Carr, knowing who knows where he's going to be possibly next year. Who knows if he's going to remain with the Cowboys? But they got a lot to build on. They're getting younger, and that's the best thing. That's what's keeping the defense focused and going forward, is because they know that they are the best part of this team is the defense, and they know that they're the best part, and that's why they know that they have to carry a lot bigger stick than what the offense can. Because Matt Castle, I know he's had some success in other places. But I thought it was very hilarious last week when he said, I think I'm going to be good in this offense because I watched Tony Romo. And I just thought to myself, well, sir, you are not Tony Romo. And you will not be able to play like Tony Romo when you get on the field, because even though he's 33 years old, a few years younger than Romo, he just cannot sense the pressure like Romo, and he cannot make the throws that Romo can. So either way, he knows that the defense is carrying this team, and that's going to be what dictates if they win the NFC East and make a late push.
All right. Well, before you sign off, why don't you give us your score prediction for Sunday? What's going to happen?
Well, I think looking at this game, obviously you'll say that the Green Bay Packers have a massive advantage when it comes to the person that's leading the team on the field, and that's the quarterback. And though that is a big-time deal, and I think the Packers have a better team right now, there is only – really one person missing practice right now for the Cowboys, and that's Tony Romo. I think that this defense is good enough to really, really scare the Packers. I heard you guys talking earlier about Eddie Lacy. I don't know if you should put all your eggs in the Eddie Lacy basket against this run defense. And I also don't know if they are going, this is the type of game for the Packers that is going to be really tough, because you never want to go up against a team with nothing to lose. And I think that's what the Cowboys are. They're a team with nothing to lose. They know that they shouldn't win the division. They know by all rights they won't win the division, but they are still making a late push, and that makes them dangerous because they have nothing to lose and everything to gain. So my score prediction is this: 17-14 Dallas.
Wow.
Gets there the win in Lambeau.
That's bold. I don't like it, but it's bold. I'll give you that.
It's bold. It's bold, and I haven't even started drinking yet.
Well,
just giving one,
you,
I'm just giving a pick for the hometown crowd.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us where we can find you on Twitter, and then you can sign off and you can start drinking.
Thanks, guys. Well, it's at Mr. Sizemore. That's at MrSizemore. You can find not just my work, but all the great writers at Blogging the Boys. It's bloggingtheboys.com. Bloggingtheboys.com is where you can find all of our writing. We look forward to this matchup this weekend. Like I said, by all rights, the Cowboys shouldn't win this game, but I know they're going to try their damnedest to do so. So we'll see what happens this Sunday. The Packers have had the Cowboys number as of late. But the rivalry, I don't think, is nearly as prominent as it was years ago. But still, I think it's going to be a tough game for both teams. It's going to be fun. But, yeah, it's been a great time talking to you guys. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Michael.
Pleasure, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
See you. All right. So, Michael, very boldly choosing the Cowboys to win at Lambeau with Matt Castle at quarterback. Trying really hard not to laugh while I recap that little part. But Michael did a great job. We're very happy he can make it. We're very lucky to have all these great guests that we've had. So, he says, Cowboys, guys, what are you looking for this week? What's going to happen? Dusty?
He mentioned the run defense. Run defense has been good. It's a stout unit. I was actually surprised to see that they are, as far as yards per game, they are slightly above average. They're 15th in the league this year, averaging 104.1 yards per game on the ground. So that's a little shocking to me. They're actually just a couple spots above the Packers. They've looked better. I don't know if it's just because I've been watching more of their – I've watched their games all season. They love showing Cowboys games where I can't have any choice but to watch them. But
every week
they have looked good. I know, man. Like, it's ridiculous. Anyway, they've looked good. And especially with the Packers line issues, it is troublesome. Like I said, they have – I do feel like they've looked better. Sean Lee's dynamite, that the linebackers are good, defensive line is good. I don't think Lindsley's playing. Like we said, there's not really a drop-off between Treader and Lindsley. But, I mean, I don't really know where Lang is sitting, if he's going to be coming back in. I'm not sure what Bulaga's status is. I mean, the line – we need the line to be good to get the running game off. And I think we can get there, but if we trot out the same guys in the same performance we had last week – the running game's not going to go anywhere. So, I mean, that's huge. I'm looking for Ty Montgomery practiced this week. There's a Ty Montgomery sighting. So I don't know if he's going to play this week. He doesn't know yet. I think that could be a big boost to the offense. My big thing is how they used Richard Rodgers in this past game. We've been railing for a while about how they run him outside. They run him in the flat. I had my theory about where they kind of plug him in where Ty Montgomery was and just hope everything goes well and they're not the same player. He had seven targets this game, or eight targets this game. Seven of them, he caught all eight. Seven of them came in the middle of the field. One came outside the numbers to the right. That's exactly where he should be.
Exactly. He's
just kind of running the middle of the field, taking on linebackers, running over safeties with a head full of steam. He wasn't creating a ton of separation, but he's creating enough for Rodgers to get him the ball. It's how he should have been used. Now he wasn't running all of his routes there, but more of them than he had been. So I actually looked at this. He ran, I think it was 87.5% of his routes or his catches came in the middle of the field, whereas for the season, like, say, where are we? 45% of his targets have come in the middle of the field.
That's criminal.
So it was a huge increase this week, and I'm hoping that improves. It's exactly where he should be. So I'm hoping maybe this kind of wakes him up a little bit and shows, you know, this is he should be living in the middle. And I'm hoping this past week woke him up. So I'm looking for Rodgers in the middle. I'm hoping possibly a return to Montgomery and maybe not much of a running offense, but maybe a little bit of the short passing offense. They kind of got that going a little bit. Some of the quick hitting stuff, especially in the second half, they look good doing it. Montgomery will help that, but our receivers are creating separation a little bit. Rodgers was late on some throws, but that second half, they looked a little bit more like the Packers. So I'm hoping that, that Rodgers in the middle and maybe some more quick hitting passes will kind of open it up a little bit. So that's kind of what I'm looking for this week.
Yeah. We could talk all day about Richard Rodgers, and we've talked about him a lot. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember any of us saying anything negative about Richard Rodgers himself. Just the way he's been utilized has been, to reuse a word I just used, it's been criminal. You know, you're using a slower guy with good hands, big, he's strong. You know, that's a middle of the field player. That's not a bubble screen player. It made no sense the way he's being utilized.
I've talked about this with, people I watch the games with, random homeless people on the street. The Packers, it's almost like the Packers are trying to make me hate Richard Rodgers. I've always been a big Richard Rodgers fan. I really like him. But the way the Packers are using him, they're kind of making me hate him. And I don't hate him. I hate the way he's being used.
Right. And, yeah, like you said, this week they used him as you would use a tight end who's not incredibly fast, but he's strong and has good hands. You use him up the middle. And he exploded for a big game even before he caught the Hail Mary. You take that catch away, that catch and touchdown, he still had a good game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he caught a ball over the middle, kind of beat a linebacker off the line. Again, not a ton, but enough for Rodgers to fit the ball in. And again, it being a 26-yard gain, at the end of which he just trucked a safety, like just absolutely trucked a safety because he's in the middle with a head full of steam, not with his back to the defense running in the flat trying to turn upfield while being tackled. It just it made a huge difference how he was used this week.
And there's been a lot of complaints, a lot of criticism aimed at Richard Rodgers about how he can't break a tackle. You know, that's just what we see on these bubble screens in, you know, a position he shouldn't be used in. But now you see him going forward with that head of steam, trucking that safety. He broke that tackle. It's just he can break tackles, just not when he's not running at full speed. That's just not him. The other thing I wanted to talk about was defense. I don't know, kind of bittersweet, I guess. You know, one quarter of just terrible, terrible defense, and then three quarters where they actually looked pretty good. And they stopped another running game, and overall they just looked pretty good. On the other hand, that game is exactly what bothers me about Dom Capers. It's why were we that bad for quarter number one? You know, why can't we put together a whole game where we look good? And I'm not saying we need to go pitch a shutout and make sure they don't gain a single yard on defense, but, you know, even in the three other quarters where we kept them relatively off the scoreboard, not completely, but we kept them from scoring a lot, you know, they were still getting some big games, and they were still finding holes in this defense, and those holes still exist. I won't get into that because overall the defense played a good game. They shut down another decent running game. So overall, I'm not going to give them much strife this week. I gave them strife during the game, and I have to give a shout-out to Brennan Rupp, a guy on Twitter. He's a good guy, very good Twitter personality. He and I just could not possibly disagree more on Dom Capers. He is a big supporter of his, and I want the guy gone yesterday. And don't worry, Brendan, you're still a good guy. Having said all that, Dom Capers has a chance to make a real statement this week. I know it's not a great quarterback he's going up against, but that's kind of what I mean. You're up against a good running game, so go shut it down. Put everything, stack eight in the box. I don't care. Make Matt Cassel beat you. Make him make throws. Make him read the pressure, read the blitzes, all that stuff that he's proven he is not capable of doing at a high level. Make him beat you. If Darren McFadden can come out and have a big game against us, that's going to spell trouble, because it is going to be hard to score against this defense. So you have to shut down this running game. And I know it's a really good offensive line, and Darren McFadden, if he has a big game, we just have to stop him. That's all. We really do. You know, we've done a really good job lately with run defending. You have to do it. You have to knock him down, keep him from running this game, keep the ball in our offense's hands, and we can win this by a lot.
Whew. Yeah, and
I feel like I just said a lot.
To add on top of that, if you're gonna stack the box, I've said it before. I said it in my article this week. Dom, I know you're listening. If you're gonna stack the box and have a single high safety, please, for the love of God, make that safety Ha-Ha Clinton Dix instead of Morgan Burnett. Morgan Burnett's better at the line. He had that quite a bit this past week. He has a habit of doing that this season, where they have a single high safety, and it's Morgan Burnett and Clinton Dix is at the line. Clinton Dix has improved as a tackler, especially the season has gone on. He's better deep than Burnett is. So if you're going to stack the box, please, please rotate Burnett down instead of Clinton Dix.
He probably wasn't going to do that, but as you said, he is definitely listening to this. And
yeah.
He is taking
I'm sorry I didn't come over for dinner last week, Dom. I was busy, but yeah, I'll hit you up this week, man.
Oh boy. I have nothing to say to that. Jordan, what are you looking for?
All right. For this particular game, and just to kind of build, you guys have brought up a lot of good points. I'm just kind of echoing to a degree on what you guys have said. This game, they can take a lot from the way the defense played against the Vikings even a couple weeks ago. It's a pretty similar situation where you have a good good, if not great, running game. Darren McFadden is not Adrian Peterson, but he's very serviceable as a running back, and with that offensive line can be damaging. But Dom Capers and this defense has usually done pretty well against the either below average or the inexperienced quarterback, which Matt Castle definitely falls into that category. So I don't see the defense struggling too much in this game unless they let Dez Bryant get behind him and make big plays. He's the one guy that they have in their receiving corps that a team like Minnesota does not. And he's a guy that still scares me, even with Calvin Johnson. Didn't have the best game against us this past Thursday, but after that turnover from Rodgers, he was right there making that great touchdown catch that only a handful of guys can make, and Dez Bryant is definitely one of them. So Dez Bryant is definitely a got to be a point of concern for this team, because you know Castle, if we get pressure on him, he's going that way. And Dez Bryant can make plays out of nothing. That's definitely a point of concern. On offense, dealing with Sean Lee, maybe you guys will remember that. I know for the past two games we played against Dallas, the playoff game and then the one 2 years ago where we had the big comeback, Sean Lee did not play in either of those games. So I'm not sure if we've actually ever played this Cowboys defense with Sean Lee healthy. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but we haven't played him recently. So, and I thought Michael brought up good points about that. I think that'll make it considerably tougher for Lacy or Starks or Crockett or whoever is taking the snaps to have a real productive running game. If we do, then fantastic. But with this particular game coming up, and I looked even back at the stats of the playoff game last year, the guys that had really big games were Devontae Adams, who had, I think, somewhere around 7 or 8 catches over 100 yards. Randall Cobb, the exact same thing. Yeah, they actually didn't have a good game. In that playoff game was Jordy Nelson. It was pretty ineffective. So, and with this pass game against Detroit, you had Richard Rodgers as kind of the focal point of this passing offense, and with that, we almost lost the game. So it can't happen with Richard Rodgers as the focus of our passing offense. These guys still have to step up if we want to win this game comfortably.
Yeah, I like that. And I, to your point about Dez Bryant, I will gladly give up 25 to 30 yard throws to Dez Bryant if it means we're shutting down the running game. That's, that's really all I care about. Matt Castle is not going to beat this team. Even if he gets a couple long throws, he's not going to be what beats us. What can beat us is their running game, and what can beat us is their defense. So we need to counter those two things.
Go ahead, Dusty.
Well, I was just going to ask how you guys felt about them against Jason Witten, given the Packers' historic struggles against tight ends. Are you worried more about Witten than you are about Bryant?
I'm worried more about Witten on third down plays. If we're talking like 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, he's going to be the target on those kind of plays. That's where he concerns me. Not as much the big play threat. That's obviously Dez. But yes, and Witten is very, obviously, one of the best tight ends still, even at his age, and just one of the smartest tight ends. So in those situations where we need to get off the field, he's a very dangerous weapon to have and a reliable option for Matt Castle. So, no, definitely a point of concern.
Well, Witten, for me, at this point in his career, he's a safety blanket. When you need a first down from 3rd and 7, you might look Witten. When you need, you know, that force in the red zone, when you're trying to get a touchdown instead of a field goal, you're going to look at Jason Witten. But between the 20s, you're not seeing Jason Witten very much anymore. You know, he never relied on his speed, but what speed he did have is not really there anymore. He's still strong. He is still very smart, and it's why I think he can make a couple important plays for them, but I don't see any big plays. So my concern is definitely more Dez Bryant, but again, I don't care what they do in the passing game because I know it's not going to be very much.
No, again, as you were saying, we shut down McFadden and Turbin. It's if we can hold on to the ball, if Rodgers doesn't turn the ball over, we don't cough the ball up and give him a short field like we did for Detroit in the first half, then there's no reason that they should be able to mount long drives against us and win this game. There really isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other big key is something we talked about earlier, is the play calling. Is McCarthy going to shut up? Is that what the problem has been? And, I mean, if we come out and put up a masterful offensive performance against a really good Dallas Cowboys defense, and it happens to come just a few days after McCarthy said he needed to shut up and let Clements do his job, then McCarthy needs to be taking a lot of flack for that. Because that is not substantial evidence, but it's a little bit of evidence that what's been plaguing this offense has been him and his inability to give the real power to the guy he's giving power to. That would just be a mortal sin in my eyes.
Yeah, I mean, a little flack. I mean, if they were sitting 4-8 instead of 8-4, that's bigger, as winning cures a lot of things. But it,
of course,
I mean, it's obviously less than ideal, but they're sitting 8-4, and the fact that they, I mean, Packers are notorious for not making any changes midseason and keeping very tight-lipped. And if McCarthy comes out and says that, to me, I like that he's saying it now rather than in the off-season, or quietly addressing it in the off-season coming out, you know, next year. The fact that he's saying it publicly, it's a mini bye. It's 10 days, but it's still not an actual bye. You still got a game the next week. The fact that he's saying it now with a game coming up on Sunday, to me, that kind of says a lot that maybe, I mean, we talked before about how the Packers are maybe unwilling to make changes or admit mistakes, at least publicly, at least in this part of the season. For him to come out and say that, even if they come out and do something, yeah, that's too bad that he didn't say that earlier, and that is frustrating for sure. But the fact that he's come out and saying that now, and if that changes their fortunes going forward, they're on top of the NFC North. If this changes now, I hold nothing against him. I kind of hold it as a, well, it's too bad he didn't do that earlier. Packers could have been better this whole year, but they're in first place in the NFC North. They're going to make the playoffs, 2 or 3 seed, and they're going to be fine. I kind of like that they're doing it now instead of off season, I guess.
I see your point, but if this has been a problem, he really should have said it and done something about it 6 weeks ago. And we could still be in the conversation for, you know, I guess we are technically still in the conversation for the number 2 seed, but it doesn't look very likely. You know, it seems like a lot of this, you know, strife, I guess, could have been avoided.
Yeah.
It's true. As a counterpoint, I will fight you for disagreeing with me. Just straight up coming to my city, I will fight you, Brian.
I respect the hell out of what you just said. All right. Moving on. Let's get to the predictions. So last week we did a little bit better. Jordan did not. He went 1-2 again in his predictions. He is 2-4 on the season. I went 2-1 last week, so I improved to .500. I'm 3-3. So, yeah, basically could have just flipped a coin. And Dusty is also at 3-3. He went 0-3 2 weeks ago, 3-0 last week. So hats off to Mr. Dusty Eveley.
Clean sweep.
Clean sweep. It was quite impressive. I mean, it was up there with the Miami Dolphins going undefeated through a Super Bowl.
Thank you.
It was right up
last
there.
Last week I was almost the Dolphins cheering for going 1-15, but it wasn't, you know, because I didn't win anything. But,
So myself and Dusty sit atop the standings. We look down upon Jordan and his inferior ability to predict what's going to happen in NFL games.
I'm just about to throw that 60-yard Hail Mary and come back and win it at the end. That's what I'm waiting for.
All right. Prediction time. As we said, you know, Michael picked the Cowboys to come into Lambeau and win. I think he's a little bit crazy. I think McCarthy shutting up might actually help I'm banking on the fact that that has been an actual problem with my prediction, and I'm saying Packers win 27-13. They're going to get back on track, put some points on the board. That'll be it.
I like that.
All right. So, guys, give me your predictions. Dusty, what you got?
I hope they get back on track. I hope that's, I hope that's been the problem. I hope that it's been fixed. This Cowboys defense is still very good, and this Cowboys offense is still really bad. So I am going to take Packers 20-10.
All right. Jordan?
I see in this game, I think this is finally a game where the Packers can force some turnovers. I think they can force Castle into some bad throws, give themselves some short fields, make it a little bit easier for the offense to punch it into the end zone. I don't see us going off for anything over – I don't see us busting out for a 30-35 point game, not against this defense. They're too good for that. But I do see us handling the Cowboys. I could see them still getting some yards, picking up some first downs, getting into field goal range. And when they get into field goal range, their guy is money. So with Dan Bailey, we don't want him with any chance to tie the game or win the game at the end of regulation, because it's probably going in with the way he does business. But with that, I think the Packers take it. I think they're going to win. I'll go 23-15 for my score prediction. Packers over the Cowboys.
All right. Now, you mentioned Dan Bailey, and I have to bring up that Dusty is a little bit lucky to have gone 3-0 last week, because he picked the San Francisco 49ers to beat the Chicago Bears. And that almost did not happen.
Blaine Gabbert.
You are almost a believer in Blaine Gabbert. For some reason, you are a believer. It's true. but it all came down to a Robbie Gould field goal that could have ended that game instead of sending it to overtime. And it was, what, a 34, 37 yard or something like that? A chip shot for a kicker that good.
Oh, yeah.
And he shanked it.
Yeah.
So, Dusty, sometimes it's better to be lucky than it is to be good.
And it all evens out, lucky. Man. I went 0-3 last week, and I had some bad luck. So it's just thankful someone's looking out for me, and it turned around this past week.
Oh, man. Well, at least luck can help you. Apparently, luck can't do anything for Jordan.
No, absolutely not.
If New England can't even beat Philly and Foxborough, then
fun watching that game.
I did too. It was
awesome.
I was not mad being wrong on that particular play. So.
No. As much as I dislike the Eagles, it was funny to watch Tom Brady lose that game. Oh boy! All right, moving on to our upset picks. So, to recap, we are all picking the Packers to win, except for the homer, Michael. But what you going to do? All right, upset picks. Jordan, you were the worst last week, so I'm going to give you the first chance at redeeming yourself.
All right, upset pick. I'm taking Steelers over the Bengals. Big Ben, that offense, Antonio Brown looking real good. Steelers still having to do some work to make sure they keep hold of that wild card spot. Bengals, I think Bengals are still top. I think they're number one seed in the AFC, and that gives me a great cause for concern about their ability to win this game. I think them thinking they're the best. If just seeing them at the top of the standings in the AFC, I don't see that going well for Cincinnati. Typically doesn't for that team. So. I'm taking Pittsburgh over Cincinnati on Sunday.
All right. It's your big chance. All right, Dusty, what do you got?
I'm taking Titans over the Jets. Games in New York. Jets defense. I like Bowles a lot, but the defense has not been great the past couple of weeks. There's been some holes. Pretty good play for the most part, but they have tendencies to let the other team get on runs. So I'm seeing the Titans. I don't know if that's just my bias sneaking in. We talked before, I think one of my second or third college teams I've been rooting for them since I was a kid is the Oregon Ducks. So I don't know if that's just my love of Mariota just kind of getting, or as Goodell would say, Mariota. I don't know if that's just getting like a little too far into that, but I like what they did this past week. I like what he's done this season when he's been healthy, and I think I can see them rolling into New York and taking that game.
All right, use this opportunity now that you're talking about Oregon Ducks to talk about how much you love Joey Harrington.
I'm a Joey Harrington fan. I will not apologize for that. I like him. I think he was a subpar NFL quarterback. To put it lightly, he had some good moments. I think he could have been better with a better team. He's great in college. I like Joey Harrington. I don't know what you want me to say about him. I am a Joey Harrington fan. I love him. I want to get an apartment together. I want to have brunch with him someday.
Oh boy! Before we get weird with this, we'll move on. I'm to blame here.
Before we get weird.
Before we get weird, it can get a lot weirder
keep
from there.
You guys want me to. Keep talking about all the stuff I want to do with Joey Harrington. Just like a
before
nice, like a
Dusty
nice
comes out and says he wants to have Joey Harrington's babies, we'll move on.
I think I've said that already, but like, just take a walk in a park with like an ice cream cone or something, you know, just kind of hanging out.
All right.
I'm done. Go on.
Moving on. For my upset pick, I'm picking Washington over Chicago. Washington really struggled on Monday night. But then again, Chicago really struggled against the San Francisco 49ers, which begs the question, how the hell did we lose to that team in Lambeau? Oh, my goodness. It's enough to give me stomach ulcers. Washington, a solid defense. They hit really hard. They hit really fast. And, I don't know, they capitalize on mistakes. I don't really know what more to say. Chicago is vulnerable at Soldier Field. You know, they're much better on the road, so I don't see them winning it. All right, on to the locks of the week. I'll start with this one. I'm just going to say it. This is kind of playing with cheat codes, but it's Cardinals over Vikings. I just don't see a scenario where the Vikings go to Arizona and win this game. They're down four defensive starters this week and key starters as well. And so it's going to be hard for them to stop that high-flying offense that they have. And there's also a really good defense in Arizona. And if they can find a way to limit Adrian Peterson, it could be another very long day, similar to what just happened to them in Minnesota at the hands of the Seattle Seahawks, who just... I'm going to put it kindly and say they embarrassed the Vikings on Sunday. So I don't see a scenario where the Vikings bounce back from that and get a big win. I like Teddy Bridgewater. I think he's got a future, but he's just not there yet. He's not ready to beat a good defense, and especially not on the road. So Cardinals it is. Dusty, what you got?
First of all, your pick is it's music to my ears. I hope that happens. I agree with everything you said. Mine, I do not feel good about this pick at all, but I'm going to take the Giants to head into Miami and beat the Dolphins. Both of these teams have been just extremely inconsistent this year, to put it mildly. When they're good, they can be good. When they're bad, they can be very, very, very bad. The Giants look like they could possibly on an upswing, which, you know, they could still win the division quite easily. Miami looks really, really bad. So I'm betting on that trend to continue. I don't think it's going to be a blowout for the Giants. I do think Miami's going to just not be good. I was not a fan of Tannehill coming in to when he was drafted. Based on how he's performed like up until this year, I had high hopes for him this year, so I have not watched enough Dolphins games because I have some amount of self-respect to really see what's going on with him. But it's shocking how bad he's been and how bad that offense has been this year. And that defense, really, I thought the defense was going to be better. So They can be good. I'm not betting on it this week. I'm thinking of the two inconsistent teams, the Giants are a little better this week.
Yeah, the Dolphins are definitely among those biggest disappointments for 2015. Right up
there. They were picked by a lot of people to challenge the Patriots for that division. I mean, I was kind of among them. I think I picked them to finish second this year. I really thought that defense was going to be good. I thought the offense was going to take a step forward. I really thought they were going to be good, and they really, I mean, it wasn't all Philbin, because Campbell has had like one good game. Like, Dan Campbell hasn't been much better. So it's been legitimately shocking. I thought they were going to be good this year.
Maybe they'll do us a favor and hire Tom Clements this time.
Yes, please.
Maybe. If they stole Philbin from us last time, this time they can have Clements. All right, Jordan, your lock.
All right, I'm actually taking a team that I wouldn't be too surprised to actually sneak in possibly to that second wild card spot in the NFC. I'm taking the Tampa Bay Buccaneers over the New Orleans Saints this weekend. Buccaneers are 6-6 right now. 4 games left. They're going to be favored in all but one of them when they play the Panthers the last week. They're probably seeing the way the Vikings have been playing and saying, wow, this team might be tanking right now. We might be able to sneak into that wild card spot. So I see them with the Saints. Saints played about as good a game as could have been expected out of them against Carolina. I mean, it took a fantastic game from Cam Newton, the front runner for the MVP, to beat the Saints. And I think that was their best game that they could have played this year. And I think it's going to go downhill from that this week. I'm taking Tampa Bay over New Orleans.
We as a group running this podcast, I challenge us to go 1 week without mentioning the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't know if we've done it yet. They're always either our lock or our upset. Like, somebody picks them every week. It's not like they don't deserve it. They've turned a lot of heads this year, so it just seems every week one of us is mentioning them.
Not to mention, just throwing this out there as well, they sneak into that sixth spot, and we stay in three. Could be Battle of the Bays in the playoffs wild card weekend. Just throwing that out there.
Can we invite Warren Sapp and Mike Sherman back if that happens?
I think that'd be we do that at halftime. We do that at halftime, just like
okay, okay. That's
we have
good.
A we have a ceremony. Sherman comes out in a cart. they hug at midfield.
I think Clifton like just kind of stands awkwardly.
I feel like everything Clifton, good that happened on Thursday night has just been undone by the fact that both Greg Hardy and Warren Sapp got mentioned on this podcast.
but then it's all good, because then Chad Clifton comes out with a metal chair and just gets Sapp in the back, and Lambo just erupts. There's no way we lose that game. No way.
Right.
Chad Clifton off the top rope.
Love it.
That's Chad Clifton's win.
Oh,
just a cage lowers onto the field.
Oh, goodness. I'd pay good money to see that. I really would. Let it be staged as you want. I would pay good money. Take out a second mortgage on the home that I have not yet bought.
Yes.
I'm into it. All right. Moving on. From probably the most interesting part of this podcast, actually. Your fantasy sleepers for this week, guys. Dusty, lead us off.
I had a hard time with this one. I decided not to go too Giants heavy. One of my picks was going to be Will Tye for the Giants. I'm going to go James White for the Patriots, because every other Patriots skill position has been injured, has gone through traction, is maybe currently in the hospital, crawling their way out of the hospital. I'm not sure what, but White has looked good. Running back, they like to throw the running backs. He seems to be a good receiver out of the backfield. I don't know how many snaps he's going to get, but I think he's going to be productive when he gets them. I think he's going to have not a huge game, but I think he's going to have a pretty decent game this week.
All right, Jordan.
I'm going Doug Baldwin of the Seattle Seahawks. Past 4 weeks, for the Seahawks, their offense has not scored fewer
than 29 points. This is a they're starting to get scary, and it's not even their defense that's looking like the scariest part of that team. Russell Wilson is looking fantastic, as he's shown in years prior. It's a very scary looking team, and with Jimmy Graham out, Baldwin has become a primary threat. The past four games, he's gotten right around about 6 or 7 catches a game. He's had 5 touchdowns the past 2 games against Minnesota and Pittsburgh. Dangerous player. I like him as my fantasy. I guess they wouldn't really call him a sleeper, but for the sake of this, he'll be my sleeper this week.
All right. I'm going a little bit against what Dusty said. He ripped on the Dolphins pretty hard, but I'm going with their rookie receiver, Devontae Parker. I think he was the 11th overall pick in last year's draft. He's battled some injuries. He's also battled learning the playbook, but he came out and, in the absence of Rishard Matthews, caught his first career touchdown last week. Overall, looked like the receiver that they drafted 11th overall. I expect that to continue. The Giants' defense is solid. It's all right, but it's not anything groundbreaking. So Devontae Parker, he's going to build off that success a little bit and get another touchdown, 60, 70 yards on the day. He's starting to come into his own, and I think he continues it. Okay, before we sign off, guys, any final thoughts? Dusty?
We talked about the Cowboys' defense, and it is a little worrisome. I know in the 5 games that Castle has started, the Cowboys have gone 4-5. 4-5, what? 1-5, sorry.
1-5,
in the 4 games they've lost, Michael actually brought this up, but in the 4 games they lost by a combined 18 points. In fact, in all the games Romo has missed, they have gone 1-7 in 8 games, but they've lost 5 games by a touchdown or less. So I'm looking for, I think the Cowboys are going to be, they play an ugly game, but the defense is good. So I think it's going to be a close game. Again, I want to go back to Rodgers, Richard Rodgers. Just use him in the middle. Use him like you did. I'm hoping the Packers kind of build off the things they did well in the second half and even a little bit in the first half last week. And I'm curious to see how Lacy does, and I'm curious to see if Crockett sees more of the field. But I don't know. It's hard to think of the upcoming week when you're still kind of buzzing off the way the last week ended. But I'm ready for more football, man. After the way that last game ended, I'm ready. It's been kind of a mini bye. I'm ready for the Cowboys.
All right, my final thought is a shout-out to rookie linebacker Jake Ryan, who finally had his role expanded. Very well-deserved. Played a really good game of football. Had a couple rookie moments, you know, moments where he should have made reads faster, could have done something a little different, but overall just played a fantastic game. And there's a great tweet from Michael Cohen, who writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He said, "Proof that Jake Ryan has a nose for the football. He's the only Packer with 2 games of 10-plus tackles, and he's really only played twice." And it's just so true. He's had his role on special teams, but that's been about it. He had an expanded role against the Panthers and looked really good. For some reason, was not brought back out for the next couple games, but had a very big role against the Lions this week, just around the ball all the time. And just proves that, you know, maybe he's not quite there mentally, you know, doesn't quite have the playbook down, but clearly has a nose for the football, clearly has the instincts to play middle linebacker in the NFL. And they kept saying it on the broadcast, he looks like a Packer. He looks tough. He looks strong. He looks like a linebacker that would play in Green Bay. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of him as time goes on. He got a shout-out from McCarthy this week, so clearly he's gotten the attention of the coaches. Here's to him having a good finish to the season. Jordan, what you got?
I want to throw a couple stats out there real quick just to piggyback off of that. He played 74% of the Packers' defensive snaps this past game, about a little over 57 in Carolina, and besides that, not a game over 5.6%. So Yeah, that's impressive that he's had more than 10. And yeah, I'm also hoping that this means more snaps for him in the future.
Here's hoping. It helped our defense a lot. It really did. Mm-hmm. Jordan, final thoughts.
I think you mentioned a couple weeks ago, you brought up the quote that the Bears defense playing against us on that Thursday night game, that they knew it was going to be happening. We were talking about the Bears, who are very, very familiar with a lot of players on that team that are familiar with our offense. And we've played the Cowboys a couple times recently, and we're dealing with a defensive coordinator and Rod Marinelli that knows Aaron Rodgers and knows this offense very well. So in order just for us to be successful, they need to be sharp. They can't be predictable. There needs to be some creativity just to be very sharp on offense. If it's not that case, it's going to be tough. But if they're sharp and efficient on offense, it's going to be a good day. It's going to be a good Sunday afternoon for all of us.
All right. Well, one final shout out to Adam Cech and Chris Kristofsko. It's really hard to say his first and last name successively. It really is. Say it five times fast, I dare you. So just one more shout out to them. You guys are Packer bloggers. That makes you family. So we're here for you. Also, make sure you're listening to Titletown Sound every week, especially if you're listening to us. They provide a very interesting look at Packers football. Bobo's an interesting guy. He runs that show. And if he can't make you laugh, nobody can. All right. So thank you for listening, and go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.